Dr. Lynn, it doesn't seem like it's been 15 years.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
I bet that 15 years has passed pretty fast for you.
Well, it has been pretty interesting, I have to say, Charlie. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to share, especially since so much has occurred. It's actually been 17 years for me, because 2 years before the mass sighting, I had a very close sighting to our home, and, you know, captured pictures of it, and I keep going back to that original sighting because I saw these orbs, the Phoenix lights, up close and personal, and, you know, nobody can ever take that away. And I got 35 millimeter photographs that cannot be explained or denied, even though I've gone to extreme lengths for the past 15 years since the mass sighting to have them explained to me. So, yes, a lot has happened, and I don't know if your listeners are aware. I know you know that I pushed my entire professional successful medical career aside for 4 years after the mass sighting, the 313-97 sighting, where thousands of people were seeing what I had been seeing right over their heads. I mean, a mile to 2 mile wide span of these orbs that seemed to be attached to something, or actual craft, there were many things going on, traversed right over their heads, rooftop level, about 30 miles an hour, totally silent. It was very eerie for many people because it didn't even displace the air around it, not a sound. And some people actually reported seeing this object and craft, or these lights that seemed to be attached to something, take off at a tremendous speed. Others saw these orbs detach from the main object, go out into the environment, and then redock with it. Incredible technology, to be sure. And this happened throughout the entire state. There's so much mis and disinformation out there the last 15 years, I have to tell you, Jerry. And that was one of the main reasons I came forward after 7 years of anonymity and really trying to do my homework in a credible way, looking for a logical explanation, which I have yet to find, but compiling a 750-page journal of very credible data that I went to great lengths to find, and of the history of these phenomena, of the worldwide sightings that have been happening for not only decades but centuries, and other countries are much more open to these phenomena as being unearthly, these anomalous aerial phenomena, and so on. There is so much data, and finally came forward in 2004, squeezed the best of what I compiled in the 750-page journal down to 230 pages, and actually came forward about a year and a half ago with an update of what has happened since I came forward in 2004, with some stunning data that the people are just starting to hear about. We can talk about that if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I want to find out about all of that. You've kind of summed up 15 rapid years rapidly.
But it's interesting. I mean, Jerry, it's so interesting to learn how the story unfolded. And many people, if they haven't read my book, The Phoenix Lights, The Skeptic's Discovery, that we are not alone, or we're here locally to see how the media played it out and different events happened here locally, are pretty unaware of what really happened here. Because after the mass sighting, we're talking thousands of people. And again, there wasn't just one or two events, as the media or debunkers would have us think. There were many events for many, many hours. We actually have reports as early as 3 p.m. daylight sightings of these phenomena on March 13th to as late as 5:30 the next morning, when a Boeing crew was coming into the airport for work and saw one of these objects hovering right over the tarmac at Sky Harbor International Airport. It's amazing when you really start to put the puzzle pieces together and connect the dots. The story is fascinating because on March 13th itself, not only were there orb formations, not only were there crafts, and by the way, if your listeners would like to get on the website, the Phoenix Lights Network website, it is just chock full of information, credible information, authenticated photographs on the photo page, which is one of the reasons I had to come forward, actually, because I, in good conscience, I couldn't stick this data in a drawer. If it's important, it needs to be out there. And also the GAP page, G-A-P, which is a geospatial animation project, which was compiled a 12-year compilation of hundreds of reports from the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, Arizona MUFON, Village Labs, which is a clearing, local clearinghouse here in Tempe, as well as a thousand reports from Frances Barwood, Councilwoman Frances Barwood, who was the only elected official at the time to come forward to even ask for an investigation, and that wasn't until May, and she got plastered to the wall, and the sighting was March 13th. Also, there was no investigation. I mean, it was really bizarre, Jerry. I mean, when you start to look at what happened after the mass sighting itself, so many thousands of people, over 10,000 people at least, were touched very deeply, and we can get into that if we have time, by this sighting. And yet, there was no investigation. There was no explanation. In fact, all of the governmental officials were like saying, well, did something happen on March 13th? And we know some of them even saw it, which we'll get to. But at any rate, it was weird. I mean, it really was, because even a public safety issue, to have these phenomena at such low altitude. I mean, we're talking rooftop altitude. Some people said they could have thrown a rock at it. It was so close. Some had the huge wells of light right above them. It's so interesting to hear their description. At any rate, there was nothing happening until months later, June 18th, a USA Today article, front page, brought our mass sighting to international attention almost immediately. It was uncanny. I mean, overnight, every morning show, every news program was talking about it. We were deluged by media from all over the world asking, once they spoke with the witnesses and their testimony was so heartfelt and so detailed, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And the very next day, and this is how this unfolded, the very next day, on June 19th, former Governor Fife Symington called a press conference, a unscheduled press conference, to reveal the culprit of the March 13th incident. And people took it seriously. The media took it seriously. And here he comes marching out, one of his aides, in a giant alien head costume, and making a mockery of the sighting, which really offended many, many people, particularly parents who were with children, who knew that something extraordinary had gone over them. And yet, you know, here the governor was making a joke out of the whole thing. At any rate, it wasn't for another month before we would hear the official explanation, and it's interesting how that unfolded too, Jerry, because I really tried to do my homework. I mean, besides taking my photographic data to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, ASU, Arizona State University, Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics, Astronomy Departments, as well as the renowned Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara, and Navy Optical Physicist Dr. Bruce McAbee, and others, you know, I have to tell you, I mean, nobody could give me an answer. I mean, all they could do was tell me what it wasn't. But on the other side, too, I really tried to do my homework with the military. I was looking for a logical explanation for what I witnessed and photographed up close and personal. And they were more interested in seeing what I had documented on film than giving an explanation for it. I have to tell you, I have some of the conversations with the military in my book, and it's quite comical. I mean, they had no idea. They were just as curious as the rest of us what this was. And here I receive a call 1 month after the USA Today article, on July the 24th, from the head of the PR at the Air National Guard, stating, oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I was thrilled. I said, you do? What were they? And she said, well, do you believe that nobody ever looked at the log for all these months, and the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares in Operation Snowbird, which I have come to learn from military insiders means diversionary tactical maneuver. So, Jerry, I don't doubt that flares may have been sent off somewhere, but I have to tell you, in 15 years, I have not had one, and I'm pretty intimately involved with this investigation.
Yes, you are.
I have not had one person give me any kind of description that comes close to what flares look like. But anyway, she says, that must be what some people saw. Well, the first question I had, I said, well, you know, when was the Air National Guard in town? She says March 1st to the 15th. And I said, so were they in town in January? She says, oh, no. I said, are you sure? She said, absolutely not. I said, well, I have 35-millimeter pictures of the same exact phenomena that I captured on March 13th on video in the same exact location, confirmed by air traffic controllers as hovering 1,000 feet altitude in Class B restricted airspace, turning against the wind and moving as a unit behind South Mountain. And she says, well, you never told me that. And then I said, and besides, I said, you're trying to say, and I had educated myself to any logical explanation, including flares, I said, you're trying to say that flares that cannot keep a formation, that drift and drop with the wind, and illumination flares not only illuminate the smoke trails coming, you know, billowing from the flare itself, but they illuminate the area around it. Not one person described that. And you're trying to tell me that illumination flares that cannot keep a rock-solid formation, equidistant formation for hours throughout the state? And she said, oh, I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you. I'm still waiting. Anyway, they came out with the announcement the next morning when it was headlines in the papers here, that the Phoenix lights were military illumination flares. Well, talk about deflating any kind of hope that we'd find out what these things were, because anybody that saw the real deal knew that they weren't military flares, okay? But, you know, like myself, I was open. I was looking for any logical explanation. And if they're flares, okay, let's reenact it. I mean, I knew that I had photographs. Now, this is where it really gets interesting, Jerry, and we're going to go back to the 95 sighting in a second. But I have photographs, and if you look on the photo page, you know, in science we look for repeatability, and these things keep showing up in the same spot, and if you look at it, it speaks for itself. I have photographs of the same exact phenomena appearing in the same exact location, not only 2 months before the mass sighting, when the air traffic controllers also confirmed that it was 1,000 feet altitude in Class B restricted airspace, but 2 years before, if you look at those photos, when I was capturing the close orbs, the same exact phenomena is in the background there as well. So whoever did this did it at least three times, and I have them subsequently as well. But at the time, you know, I thought, geez, you know, I have it three times. Somebody did it three times. Mm-hmm. Do it again. Well, it wasn't until right before the third anniversary of the mass sighting. And by the way, not only was Councilwoman Frances Barwood plastered with jokes and comics in the paper and so forth, just innocently asking at a council meeting in May if, you know, they could look into it, because so many of her constituents, she was doing her job, so many of her constituents had called to ask why there wasn't an investigation. And she actually was running at the time for Secretary of State on a platform to get answers for the Phoenix Lights event, and pushing for a reenactment as well, publicly. And suddenly we get the word, big time, in the radio, on TV, in the news, and in the paper, that three Air National Guards were coming into town to deploy flares and show everybody the Phoenix Lights. They're going to reenact the Phoenix Lights. And I have to say that a lot of people were very excited about this, because finally we were going to have an answer. And hey, you know what? If it was them and they did it, I mean, shame on them that they didn't admit it for so long. Shame on them that the story changed about, you know, a half a dozen times at least, about planes being in the air and not being in the air. And shame on them if they went over people's heads and then denied that anything happened for months. But hey, if it's military, do it again. Well, if you get on the news page on the Phoenix Lights Network and take a look at the report, it says Arizona Family 3, you'll see the footage of their flare drop.
No comparison, really.
I mean, it really was such a failure for them.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to do a 2-week run, and they ended up scrapping it the second day because anyone that had seen the real deal knew unequivocally that it wasn't the Slayers.
So many things happened there, and we want to get into some of the details about it here in a minute, but since this period, you say you have evidence that things like that was happening before the mass sighting.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been happening recently?
Actually, they've been happening for centuries. I mean, if you really look at the data, not only do you find, you know, in primitive caves in Pakistan and elsewhere, you're going to find that there are long extinct animals etched out on the walls of these caves with UFOs in the sky. I mean, this is, you know...
And that's down in South Mountain, right?
Well, that's another... I'm so glad you brought that up, because absolutely. I mean, what really got me, and there were so many coincidences that happened even before the mass sighting, that I've come not to believe in coincidences, that we can get into some of them. But I have to tell you, 6 months before the mass sighting, and this will answer your question, I was asked to present my substance abuse prevention education program. I've been what's ironic about this, Jerry, and my part in this and why I came forward as well to, you know, if I can use my expertise to lend some credibility to this topic, how can I not? But I've been doing community education for the past 35 years, and on vital health issues. So when this fell in my lap, and I had to educate myself first, but how could I not do it for this vital issue? Because it's just so important, and I was invited to present my substance abuse prevention education program. I have a company that produces, video and workbook curriculums on AIDS and teen pregnancy and substance abuse prevention education, and at the Gila River Indian Reservation, which is actually situated in between South Mountain and the Estrella Mountain Range. There's a basin in between, and if you look at my photo page, you'll see that there's the first picture is a topography from our vantage point, and you can see that on the left side there's South Mountain, and then there's a basin, and some miles back are the Estrella Mountain Ranges, and they intersect at one point, and that's right where the Gila River Indian Reservation is, which is very sacred ground. At any rate, they have one school, and I went to the school, and I got friendly with them. They usually don't really share with outsiders, but I kept looking at my pictures and noting that these phenomena kept popping up right where South Mountain and the Estrellas intersect. And again, you can look at the data, it speaks for itself, it's right there. And I went back to them and I said, did anybody see strange lights on March 13th? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding me? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. I mean, that really blew me away. Not only do they believe, and other indigenous cultures worldwide believe, that there are other intelligences, and some of them believe that they're spirit world coming, these orbs coming to give them guidance and inspiration and comfort, and it blew my mind. And then they started telling me about the petroglyphs in the mountains, as you mentioned, and there are petroglyphs. There's actually a petroglyph that really took me aback, because on South Mountain there is a petroglyph of three orbs in a triangle formation, and that's exactly what my husband and I saw in 1995. And there are native cultures right here in Arizona that actually have protocols. And I know there's others worldwide that have protocols to invite these phenomena in. So there are certainly, history and cultures that are very open to these things, and countries. I didn't know that either. And in fact, another coincidence, if I may share this, I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all. I should say that straight out. Before our close sighting in 95, neither my husband, who's also a physician, and I had any interest in this. And if anything, I personally shied away from it because of all the scary movies and stories and all that stuff. I just wasn't interested. And, you know, here it falls in my lap, and you know, I was so touched by the experience itself in 95, if you want me to get into that, which was a very close sighting. It was just yards from our home. I mean, here, in fact, it was just a couple weeks ago. It was the night before my birthday, February 6th, that the eve of my birthday is the 7th, and I was leisurely taking a bath, and one wall of our bedroom is a window. We live pretty high mountainside in Paradise Valley and have a panoramic view of the city skyline, so we know what planes look like and helicopters and streetlights and car lights, and we see planes coming into Sky Harbor all the time, and certainly flares occasionally. We see those too, which are very different from the true unknowns, by the way. And suddenly my husband calls me out of the bath, kind of frantic, what the hell is that? And a little below us, because we're pretty high, over very treacherous desert grounds, were three amber orbs in a pyramid formation. One was on top and two were closely aligned underneath. And I immediately looked underneath to see if anything was causing it, and it's a private gated residence and very treacherous. Nobody goes there. It's very steep. And it was totally black. And it was about 50, 75 feet off the ground, and you know, did you ever have a mental moment where you took everything in that you possibly could? Because I didn't want to move. I mean, you hear that over and over again when someone has an unexplained experience. Mm-hmm. You're kind of, you know, just standing there in awe and watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, I've got to take everything in. I can't move. I don't know how long it's going to last. I want to get my camera, but I don't want to miss anything. So I tried to take in the shape, the color, the size, and so forth. They were about 3 to 6 feet each. They were oval-shaped, like an egg on its side. They were three distinct objects, very closely aligned. And the color within each orb, and I call them an orb because the light did not extend outside the edge. The light was totally self-contained and a uniform amber color throughout. And it didn't glare at all. That was one of the characteristics I noted immediately. It didn't glare at all. It was just mesmerizing. Every other light out there glared. And I thought to myself, you know, if I don't get a picture of this, no one's going to believe it. So I ran to the closet to grab my 35 millimeter, which I keep handy to capture beautiful sunsets that we have here in the Phoenix area. And my husband calls me back. He said, get over here quick. One of them is disappearing. And as we both watched, and when I say in awe, I mean, it was just one of the most fantastic experiences I've ever had in my life. I mean, the top orb, without budging from the other two, it didn't waver, it didn't move, it just started to implode. Like, it started to dim, but like an imploding. It's so hard to explain. Very, very...
You mean it closed in on itself?
Yeah, I mean, it started to get smaller and smaller mm-hmm. mechanically. Like there was an intelligence behind it. It wasn't anything natural that you could ever imagine.
Like turning down the radio volume, only it was visual.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, right. And it was getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it was a dot. And then it went out, but it felt as if it was still there. I mean, it was just uncanny. It was just unbelievable. And, you know, and I have to tell you, I stepped out on the balcony, took a quick picture of the two bottom orbs, and immediately noticed an eerie silence. That was really one of the other bizarre moments of my life. I mean, you couldn't hear a thing. It was just totally, totally bizarre. And, you know, at that point, I took a quick picture of the two lower orbs, and not only noticed the eerie silence, but it felt as intently as I was watching these two lower orbs. It felt that something was watching me. I have to admit that, and I didn't admit it to anybody until after the mass sighting. But going through my mind at that moment, I was thinking, who are you? What are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. And the next thing I remember, the left bottom orb started to disappear, and I took a quick picture of that. And That's all I remember, Jerry. I have to tell you, I mean, to this day, I vaguely remember anything else. I don't remember the last light disappearing. I don't really remember going in that night or going to bed, but whatever, it is what it is. And I did have photographic evidence of it. And I will always go back to that because I saw it up close, and it was nothing of this earth.
And now that this happened within a couple of weeks ago.
No, this was in 17 years ago.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I want to make sure what we're talking about. Yeah.
1995.
Okay.
That was my first sighting, and I had a... I did have a picture. There was only one that turned out at the time, but the one that turned out was pretty magnificent because it was the one that had just one light there, like half disappeared as the second one was disappearing, and one still there, which was pretty amazing. I mean, here I have something that, it verifies that something strange did happen, and I have a picture of it, and, what can I tell you? I didn't even know who to show it to, and kept wondering for 2 years what this advanced technology was doing outside our bedroom window. It was just absurd, just absurd.
Now I want to ask you, because your husband's a doctor too, right?
Yep.
And so both of you are people of science. But here we're talking, and I've noticed in some of your writings, Dr. Lynn, and discussions, that you seem to be gravitating toward, for lack of a better term, a paranormal or spiritual explanation.
Well, you know, all I can do is share the
data. And I'm not putting you down for that. I'm marveling at it.
I can share the data, and it is. I mean, that blew me away, too, because... You know, I have to tell you, I mean, when you study this information and you really look at what's happened to other people too worldwide, and that was another reason that I had to come forward as a physician. Not only as an experiencer and as a scientist, but as a physician, there are so many people out there, and let's be clear, I mean, most things can be explained. Only a small percentage cannot. And just because we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. I mean, look, it took us 17 centuries with the advent of the microscope before we realized that there are zillions of tiny living entities all around us, even in our bodies. Some are pathogens, some are beneficial. We've learned to live with it. And, you know, the same for radio waves and gamma rays and so forth. Just because we can't see them and we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on an AM dial for an FM frequency. So,
yeah.
You know, it's time we get this topic out in the open and we address it and accept it and study it so we can not only find out who's driving these things but also move forward in our own evolution, because as you mentioned, I mean, these phenomena have touched, and we're not just talking about anomalous aerial phenomena, and I'll get into that in a second because I found a connection between all unexplained phenomena in my journey to find logical explanation for the Phoenix Lights, that affect people at such a deep level and transform them forever, that it was important for me to come forward as a physician to say you're not crazy. And again, most things can be explained, but when somebody has an anomalous experience, it's real to them. And if you let it fester, particularly many people see things as kids and never tell us all because they're afraid of the criticism or discrediting or whatever, and it's not healthy. It's cathartic to share, and I urge anyone out there that has had an experience that hasn't shared it to share it with just one person. Even if you get on my website, there's a contact at the very top. You can get to my email and just share it with me, and believe me, I've had thousands of those that could have come in the last 15 years, which is fine. It's very, very healing to be able to share it. And you know, having been an experiencer and for 7 years, I have to tell you, Jerry, for 7 years I did major soul searching and major searching not only for the logical explanation but what to do with the data.